This is the podcast for Monday, October 27th, 2014, Ethics. So we're starting on utilitarianism today. Before we do that, any final comments or questions on the on egoism? Concluding thoughts. We're going to egoism, particularly in the Ayn Rand version. Well, I suppose in any version though, it's very individualistic. And utilitarianism is a more sort of what Rand would call a collectivist approach to ethics. Or it's the idea we're all into this together. It's okay to think about yourself, but you should mostly think about the world at large and other people. And that morality is all about producing the greatest good for the greatest number. And you are just one among many. And so to quote Mr. Spock in... Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Oh, wait, no, is that the Search for Spock? No, it is the Wrath of Khan. It will be on the test. It will be on the test, I guarantee it. And it's the quote is, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And so Spock is talking about they have this ethical dilemma where you can save your friends, you can save the world. Well, what are you going to do? Well, it's a bunch of people are going to die, or your friend's going to die. So, like, what does Spock do, for example? Spock is a great utilitarian example of self-sacrifice, where he goes into the engine in the chamber where there's like all this radiation, and he saves the crew by going in there, and he gets all radiated and dies. And so the idea is that I'm just one person, I'm going to sacrifice myself so that others can live. And then later on, not to give any spoilers, but I think it's the Search for Spock, the next movie, where he flips it over and decides no, the individual really does matter, and that the needs of the few or the one are as important as those of the many. But anyway, this is the utilitarian idea is that what counts is the greatest good for the greatest number, and that means that as an individual, you're going to have to sort of step aside and sacrifice and give up some things for the group. And morality requires that of you. It requires you to sacrifice yourself. And how much, I suppose, we'll talk about here. Let's see. So utility. So the utility in utilitarianism is net pleasure or happiness. So the name is a little confusing, you know. I suppose, you know, Jeremy Bentham could have come up with a better name for it. Because utility, people think about, you know, what's practical. And utilitarianism is a very practical philosophy, but it's not just concerned with, like, getting things done or about practical necessities. It's a moral philosophy. And it says when you think about morality, I mean, maybe they should have called it, happinessism or something like that instead of utilitarianism. But it's utility is just talking about pleasure or happiness. And it's talking about net pleasure or happiness, which means you take all the happy feelings and you take all the sad feelings and you lump them together and see what, like, the result is. So think about it like an accountant, right? So if you're an accountant or an economist, you're looking at all the credits, and then you're looking at all the debits, and then you have like the net amount, which is like what's left. Like if you look at profit, you have net profit, right? So there's the gross profit, and you take away the painful taxes, right? And then you end up with net profit, which, depending where you're at, might be a lot less than the gross profits. So it's the same thing with utilitarianism. You take all the happiness, but then you have to subtract all the pains, and then you end up with net happiness or pleasure, the total amount of happiness minus all the pains. And the idea is to try to maximize pleasure And you can do that in two ways, right? You can try to create more pleasure, or you can try to reduce pain. But what counts is not like how you do it, but it's the results, the end results. And so utilitarians generally talk about happiness, they talk about utility as if they're the same thing, or sometimes pleasure. And pleasure and happiness are interchangeable. They're just talking about feeling good, pleasurable sensations. So according to utilitarianism, the right act is that which maximizes utility or happiness. So you can contrast this with egoism, which says that it's the right act is the one that maximizes self-interest. Utilitarianism says the right act is the one that maximizes happiness. And not just for yourself, but for the world. You know, including any being that can have happiness, including animals, and you know, each person counts. And you can count yourself, but you can't count yourself disproportionately. You have to think about everybody else in the world. So, when you're considering like whether an act is right or wrong, you need to think about what's going to create the most happiness possible, and that's the thing you should do. And you're also thinking in terms of, you count yourself, but only as much as anyone else. So, you know, so here it's, of course, very different from egoism. Egoism says only count yourself and only count other people in as much as they count, as they are, it's in your interest to do so. So you can, you know, in egoism, who do you think about? Well, you think about yourself. But then when you think about yourself, you also think about your friends and your family, because you love them and you have good relationships with them, and maybe they help you and you help them, and so that's all right, and it's okay to love your mom if you're an egoist, right? Because you have a relationship. Relationships are good in egoism. It's just you don't think that I have an impersonal duty to go out there and just help strangers willy-nilly. And you certainly don't have like an obligation to go help people that aren't grateful about it, or don't like that people you don't like, people don't like you. This idea, like turn the other cheek. Most egoists would say that's a ridiculous notion. It's like if somebody, you know, slaps you on the cheek, you punch them in the jaw. But with utilitarianism, you can count yourself, but only as much as anybody else. Otherwise, you're being selfish. And selfishness in utilitarianism is seen as largely a bad thing. So there's two parts to utilitarianism. One is the theory of value. So the theory of value in utilitarianism is called hedonism. So hedonism is a philosophical view, is a view that only pleasure is intrinsically valuable. So when something's intrinsically valuable, it means, well, let me just ask this, what does it mean for something to be intrinsically valuable as opposed to just valuable? No, it's more about the value itself. Like, the idea is it's going to be valuable to you, but what's the difference between, like, the opposite of intrinsic value is extrinsic value, or sometimes it's called instrumental value.
Is it kind of like pleasure is the only thing truly worth fighting for? Like, everything else in your life should be going towards gaining pleasure. So the extrinsic value is like, I'm getting money because I believe money will bring me pleasure. So it's not money that's the end goal, it's the pleasure, and money is a way of getting that.
Exactly. Good point. So it's you've got it. So the extrinsic or instrumental value helps you get what's actually valuable for its own sake, what's intrinsically valuable. So there's nothing intrinsically valuable about little green slips of paper, but what's valuable is what they can get you. You can exchange them for goods and services. And then why do you want those goods and services? Well, because they make you happy. You had your hand up, right? Okay, sorry about that. Yes, go ahead.
When you say only pleasures is intrinsically valuable, do you mean happiness and pleasure, like in the same way? Because in the book, it was the two of them, I thought.
Right. So the utilitarians think about happiness as just being lots of pleasure and not very much pain. And not just physical pleasure, but emotional pleasure and mental pleasure and the pleasure you get from enjoying great works of art, the pleasure you get from doing philosophy. So it's not just like bodily sensations they're talking about. We're talking about being happy, feeling good. And feeling good could mean like, a romp in the hay with an attractive member of the opposite sex, or the same sex, if that's the way you swing, right? Or it could mean going to the opera and seeing the ring cycle. Or it could mean drinking lots and lots of beer and getting drunk. Or it could mean going to a wine tasting thing up in the wherever they do wine tasting. I don't know. There's lots of vineyards around here. But, it can be, it's just run the gamut. It could be having a spiritual experience going to church. So it could be lots of different things. So pleasure, it should, just don't think about it as being like, hedonism usually, in modern parlance, it means somebody likes going out and having a lot of sex and getting drunk and listening to loud music or something like that. But that's not what's meant here. Hedonism is just the idea that what matters in life is feeling good. You had your hand up earlier.
You pretty much answered it, actually. I was going to say, instead of pleasure, could food be an
intrinsically? It would be instrumentally or extrinsically valuable. Because it's... But you need, why do you want to eat food? Well, because you want to live. So that's
right.
Important for your health.
It's
whereas health might be Now, it's interesting, health seems like you might think it's an intrinsic value because, it's, survival. But then the question is, well, why do you want to survive? The utilitarians will say, and these theories have, they have an impact on the way you see the world. So a utilitarian will say, suppose you find out you just had cancer, and the doctor tells you it's a very, really virulent form of cancer, and you're going to be dead in a month. And starting in 2 days, you're going to feel excruciating pain in your stomach, and it's not going to let up unless you take high doses of morphine, where you're just going to be totally out of it. And then say, but we have this doctor-assisted suicide thing, so you can in 2 days you can get your house in order. You just take this pill, and you'll feel sleepy, and then you'll die, and you'll avoid all that pain. And a utilitarian would say, take the damn pill, right? And they would say, look, your life is not going to be meaningful if it's filled with pain, and that a month of excruciating pain, is not valuable. So they'd say you only live as long as you're feeling good, according to utilitarianism. Or now the thing is, what about this whole self-sacrifice? So I think the idea is that by lingering on excruciating pain, you're not doing anybody else any good either. You're sucking up a lot of healthcare resources. You're making your family upset. You're et cetera, et cetera. So it's not just you. But yeah, so the idea is that, think about knowledge. Is knowledge an intrinsic value? Is it good just to know the truth for the sake of knowing it? Well, a utilitarian would say no. Knowledge, but does that mean that utilitarians are a bunch of ignoramuses and they don't care about learning stuff? Well, no. I mean, Mill's a utilitarian, and Mill is a philosopher. And his idea is that knowledge is valuable because knowledge leads to happiness. If you understand the world better, you're able to live a better life. You're able to appreciate the finer things in life, and you're able to do intellectual things, and so you're able to have a wider gamut of pleasures than a person that is uneducated and not able to understand or appreciate those things. So he thinks that knowledge is valuable, but only for what else it can get you. So the other part of utilitarianism is the theory of action, and that's called consequentialism. So its theory of action says that the only thing that matters is the result or the consequences of an action. So when you're trying to figure out whether an act is right or wrong, you're trying to give it a moral evaluation, you just have to think to yourself, well, if I do this, what's going to happen as a result? If it's going to result in good consequences, then it's the best consequences possible, then it's the right act. If the results are going to be mixed or not that great compared to other things you could do, then it's a wrong act. And utilitarians tend to think about things in terms of better and worse rather than just sort of right and wrong. So they'll say, well, you can do something that's okay, it's good, but then there's something that might be better that you could do. So only the results are relevant. Doesn't matter how you get to those results. It matters what the results are. So sometimes this phrase is used, or maybe the question is raised, do the ends justify the means? And the idea is the ends are the end result, sometimes people will say, right? And then the means is how you get there. So do the ends justify the means? In other words, if you're going to get this really good result, does that justify any act you perform to get there? Somebody give me an example of something where you might do something which might kind of sort of seem like it might be bad, but you do it in order to get a good result. Yeah. So, are you talking about execution or?
Yeah.
So that.
Like the death penalty or whatever.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that one. I'd say that would be a good act if the person has it coming. I'm not sure about rape as a capital crime though. But that's like, I suppose I think about a bad person being punished as a good thing. I'm trying to think of maybe a less controversial example of where you do something which maybe in ordinary circumstances would be bad, but it's got a good result. I don't know how to get you first.
Keeping something from a friend in hopes of protecting them from what they feel if you told them?
Yeah, so maybe like a lie of omission where your friend, suppose, for example, like what might be something you tell your friend they'd be upset about?
You slept with their boyfriend?
There you go. You say that. For some reason, that's always where I end up going. It's like, so you have this promise, right, of fidelity, and your friend has, like, let's suppose it's like somebody else, right? So you're trying to spare their feelings. Suppose they're really in love with their boyfriend or girlfriend, and you know that the boyfriend or girlfriend is faithless. So you say, well, and then you know about it, but you just don't tell them. And suppose they might even ask you about it, and maybe you tell like a little white lie. Like they ask you, hey, I heard there were some rumors about my boyfriend or girlfriend. You know, do you know anything about that? And you're like, I haven't heard anything about that, because you don't want to be the one to tell them. Because you think it's really going to hurt their feelings. So that would be like a lie of omission. And some people think, well, even though I told a lie, lying is okay if I can do something good, like spare this person's feelings. That one's kind of, you might think, well, long term, maybe better off telling the truth, I suppose. Yeah?
I was going to say you could do something like keep irate and take over some slump, put in decent pulling housing. Like, it seems kind of rude to think 12 people and destroy their houses. On the plus side,
well, maybe more people or different people, but yeah. So the idea is you go to like some low-income housing and tell all the people they're evicted and bulldoze it down and build like some condominiums or something like that. as they call this, gentrification. And typically they're, you know, poor, largely minority people get squeezed out of their homes, or sometimes you get kind of rural areas the way they want to develop them, and then you build in some condos, and then a bunch of rich bastards with a bunch of money there that pay a higher tax rate are able to, you know, money flows in the community, and they all of a sudden, you know, they need a yacht club, and then people are like, you know, buying yachts, and then there's work, you know, in the fancy restaurants, and all of a sudden, you know, wages are going up, and of course the poor people that got squeezed out of their housing might not have a place to live, or at least the housing might be tight for the lower income. And then rents go up, so that can be tough for the poor people. But the idea is that overall, suppose it boosts the economy and everybody's better off, except for maybe people on the very bottom. And so as long as the amount of good you do is more than the amount of pain you cause, or you've done the most good than you could based on other things you could do. I should actually say that. So you don't have to just cause more good than you cause harm, but the idea is that, well, I could do a bunch of different things. What you've done a good act if you've created a lot of happiness and you've only created a little unhappiness. And so the end result of a better economy or of not having, you know, urban blight and high crime and lots of things that might be associated with this low-income housing is justified. So it justifies your taking down, you know, kicking people out of their houses and apartments. Yeah?
Would like the Robin Hood story change to that then? How he steals from the rich and gives to the poor? It's kind of better for the... I mean, as long as, I guess, the rich don't need it as much as the poor do...
Yeah, actually, Robin Hood's kind of an interesting story because whose money is it that he's stealing? Well, the king is like taxing people to death, and he's actually just taking the money the king's taking from other people. So, but you take like the sort of Robin Hood is like, you know, the original tax protester. but you think about the more idea of, like the idea of. The whole idea of like progressive taxation, the idea is that or even the idea of taxation period, right? You steal money from people. Why? Because the idea is that the money that you take forcibly from people is going to a good cause. So providing police and national defense and, you know, help for people who are down and out and money for scientific research and all this stuff and all the things that the government does, and it's funded on, you know, theft, right? Because nobody pays taxes willingly. There's always the implied threat of going to jail or paying a big fine, all those things. So, but the idea is it's okay for the government to steal from people. Why? Because we need a government. You had your hand up.
Oh. Curious about tolerance, because if it's for the greater good, for, you know, the net benefit, then and you're like the minority or whatever, and it's something of an issue, you know, so is there no tolerance, or is it just like, well, if you're happy and you don't bother me, then it's okay? I just don't understand how it would work.
Well, I think according to utilitarianism, you can't just sort of, you can't kind of do your own thing and be a good person. Your moral duty is to create the greatest happiness. And that means creating the greatest good, the greatest number. So if you're like, just me and mine, I just want to do my thing and leave me out of it, you're a bad person. And I suppose, you know, what should be done with like the person that doesn't want to follow along or isn't, you know, helping enough? I suppose it comes back to the utilitarian principle of like, what do you do with somebody like that? Like in an extreme case, somebody might say, well, they need to be re-educated. Like Bill Ayers, he was here a while ago. He was Obama zombie shirt today. So Bill Ayers was one of Obama's political advisors and helped him get started in politics. And he was here a couple of years ago, and there's like there's tapes of him when he was a terrorist on the FBI tapes talking about putting people in re-education camps that don't go along with the revolution, right? So the idea is that if somebody doesn't want to go along with, say, the sort of hard style Stalinist communist redistribution of wealth thing, that you just what do you do if they don't want to go along? Well, you put them in a camp, and then you educate them, i.e., like you know, coerce them to go along, and then everybody's happy, right? No more refuseniks and malcontents, and you have no social unrest. And that's the kind of, that's the kind of idea you get in kind of collectivist societies. That a person that in America, people are very individualistic, and the idea is if somebody. If you're being treated unjustly, you should, you know, get a bunch of your friends together and have a big protest. Whereas that's like really frowned on, say, in China, for example. You know, this whole idea of protesting. Even people that are sympathetic for the protesters are like, yeah, but you're a troublemaker. You shouldn't be. You're making people feel uneasy, and you just kind of go along with the program and go like. Try to work through official channels. Don't take the law into your hands. Don't go around and talk about your rights, because there's an Asian proverb: the nail that sticks up gets pounded down. So there's a strong idea of like being part of the group and conforming and so on. Yeah.
I don't think utilitarianism necessarily forces you to do the greatest good. Like as long as your result is more good than it hurts other people or creates more happiness than it hurts. You don't have to be the most impactful person in the world, like saving Guatemalan refugees and stuff like that. You can kind of do your own thing and still be moral by that standard, fortunately. I just think the ways that it's been enacted kind of don't follow that.
Well, it's interesting to look at, like, you know, Mill's utilitarianism. He's not... I mean, Mill's kind of vague. He used these phrases like "for all concerned." So it's a question about whether you have this duty to save the world, or whether it's more kind of you try to you're thinking about the results, and you're thinking about making your little world of the corner a better place, but also living a good life. I think with like later utilitarians like Peter Singer. That you have an excerpt from in the text, they're more systematic about it, and they say, well, your duty is to create the greatest happiness, but then if you're like constantly sacrificing, how motivated are you going to be to create happiness for other people? And the idea is you have to take care of yourself enough to be motivated to help other people. So there, maybe you can consider yourself, like think about like what, if I think about how can I do the most good in the world? And it might be I could think, well, I could like live off of rice and vegetables and go around and try to help homeless people. And I could try to get like a menial job and, or maybe I should try to get like I go to law school and get a job as like a shyster lawyer and make a lot of money and then just give it all away to homeless people. But then am I really going to be, once I get the law degree, am I really going to be able to like live in a crappy little apartment and ride the bus everywhere and just like eat rice and vegetables and not have any luxuries? It seems like I'm going to be miserable, and maybe I'm not going to be that effective. Maybe I'll get fired from my job, I'll get all depressed, and then I'll end up as a war, like on, you know, on SSDI, like half the country on disability depression or disability for depression. So maybe what I should do is, you know, get a job, a nice job, make a lot of money, but also I can give myself a nice car and a little condo and stuff, maybe not something really extravagant, and, you know, live. But so the idea is that I have to give myself enough trappings from my job where I'm going to be happy and content, and then I can help a lot of people a lot better. I'm going to be more motivated and a happier person, and I'll be more effective that way. Otherwise, I'm going to get burned out on this helping people thing if I'm, like, sacrificing all the time. Yeah?
Just going kind of along with that, wouldn't it just be acceptable to say that no one person is going to be the absolute pinnacle of morality, that you could just be as moral as you can be and not really aspire to be some kind of supernatural being?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, how much concession should there be to human nature? Like, egoism seems like it fits really well with human nature, in that people see self-interest seems to come natural for human beings. Sacrificing yourself inordinately for other people is really difficult for most people. So you might say, well, you should just be realistic. And the result of somebody's view, like Peter Singer's, is that most people are immoral most of the time, and that nobody's that great. But then the idea is that you don't have to be Mother Teresa to be a good person. It's just that there's better people and worse people. If you're spending a lot of your time helping people and you allow yourself some luxuries, maybe you're good enough. I think a utilitarian would say, if you're picking between, you know, better or worse, you should pick better. But then if there's better and even better than that, you should go one up and just go as far as you can, as far as you're able to, and try to live the best life possible. And, you know, not everyone's a saint. And but Peter Singer, you know, he makes this point, like, he talks about third world poverty. Well, if it's, you know, I'm going to blow $20 on moving and popcorn, or I could save, like, you know, a third world villager. And I say, well, I'd rather go see a movie. That's some, you know, some, like, inane thing with automatic weapons fire and, you know, whatever. Like, some Shinnok thing, or people with the, you know, mutant powers or something like that. Some comic book thing. And then, like, you know, some kid in the third world is going to keel over because I'm not helping him. Well, when you put it that way, it sounds like maybe I've done something wrong by indulging in my kind of hedonistic pleasures at the when I could be using those resources to save a life. Yeah.
Utilitarianism reminds me of Ayn Rand's comments about second-handers, and that's what this looks like to me, is a second-hand theory, you know, philosophy of belief system.
I think that Rand, like, has a lot of criticisms for utilitarianism, and it is this idea that you're sort of seen as a slave to other people's want. Like, the fact that somebody else needs help, it puts a moral claim on your resources to help them. And if you don't help them, then you're a bad person, according to utilitarianism. Or at least you're not as good a person as you could be. And if you're not spending most of your time and most of your resources helping people, then you're not a very good person. Yeah?
Is it really that much of a stretch to say it's less moral to spend $20 on a movie than to save a kid in a third world country?
That's pretty drastic.
Does it seem... Well, then the question is, could you ever go to the movies? Or how often do you go to the movies?
You could, but you would just be less moral for doing it.
Yeah.
You don't have to change the definition.
Right, so it's sort of, it turns out, like, it, I mean, most people think if they just, you know, go through the motions of their life and they go to school and get a job and take care of their family and kids, if they have them, and maybe, you know, make a little donation to the less fortunate, you know, around Christmas time or something like that, they're a pretty good person. Whereas utilitarianism would say, no, you're, like, unless you're spending a lot of time helping people, you're actually not that great a person. At least Peter Singer would be pretty strong on that. And I think that it depends on, like, what creates the greatest happiness for the greatest number. Yeah.
Well, maybe not highly benevolent, that you're going, you know, just kind of living your life, buying presents on Christmas and stuff like that, but you could still be considered a pretty decent person. But would you really expect to be considered, like, this really greatly moral person just for doing that?
I guess, like...
I would think that's kind of just basic care for yourself and your family, not really a sense of morality. I mean, I guess it's a good thing to do those things, but I wouldn't necessarily say that's what makes them moral. What makes them moral is when they're put in a tough situation, how they act.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that their duties towards other people are primarily negative. So they'll say, as long as I don't go around stealing, killing, lying, cheating, and so on, and I support myself and don't hurt anybody else, I'm an okay person. utilitarianism says you don't have negative duties not to violate other people's rights. You have positive duties to help people. Your life should revolve around creating the greatest good for the greatest number. And to the extent that it doesn't, then you're a bad person. And there's no difference between letting an innocent child starve to death in the third world as sending poison grain over there to poison him so he dies. Because there's no difference between killing and letting die, because the results are the same, right? It's the consequences that matter. So if the consequences of your going to the movies and not donating to third world poverty is that one child dies, that child's death is on your head. You're responsible. As much as if you had sent poison grain to the third world to cut down the surplus population. Assuming the whole the population overpopulation thing might complicate things a little bit. But we'll come back to this. What would utilitarianism tell you to do in a minute? Consequentialism sometimes can exist outside of utilitarianism. So all utilitarians are consequentialists, but not all consequentialists are utilitarians. So there are consequentialists that think there's more to life besides happiness. So they might say, there may be a consequentialist who would say, well, knowledge is intrinsically valuable, and freedom is intrinsically valuable, and I think those are like two ones that people will point to as being valuable in addition to happiness. A utilitarian is a consequentialist who is also a hedonist. It says only pleasure is valuable. So how about this hedonism thing? So do a little thought experiment here. So this great philosopher, Robert Nozick, author of Anarchy, State, and Utopia, one of the greatest works of political philosophy ever written. Nozick has this thought experiment where he says, okay, suppose you could be hooked up to this machine that could give you any experience you desire. And so it's giving you happy feelings. And so the idea is that it'd be like a virtual reality machine. So if you wanted to be, say, in the Star Trek world, right? And it'd be going on adventures, you know, and you could pick whatever, you know, next gen, reboot, whatever it is, right? Your thing. And suppose you're like a sci-fi buff, and you're like, oh, it'd be cool to, you know, to like live in a Star Trek world and go on adventures, just like on my favorite ship. And so like your life could be filled with like fun and adventure and excitement and it would be awesome. As opposed to like your day-to-day life, which is, you know, a mixture, right? So it would be like every day would be Christmas. And the question is, if you could hook up to this machine, you know, would you do it? Let me try an experiment today. So I have you guys break up into small groups with like about five people or you're around, and just I want each person to say, would you hook yourself up to machine? And let's assume for the sake of argument, your friends and family can do without you. They'll be taken care of. They might miss you, but maybe they get other things given to them that's going to make up for your absence. So don't think about this in terms of like your effect on the world. Think about like your life. So would your life be better in this sort of virtual reality machine where your happiness quotient is really, really high, but would you be missing anything from the real world? So don't answer yet, but I want you guys to break into groups of five and discuss this, and we'll talk about the results in just a minute. Yeah?
So you're saying if you live up to the machine, you're stuck there?
Yeah, you're there for the rest of your life, right? Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, you can check and readjust it, right, yeah. And I shall be back in a minute.